This is VOA News in Washington. I'm Jeff Custer. The U.S. Senate Tuesday is taking up the $95 billion supplemental budget measure containing aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Lawmakers will vote on final passage of the measure in Senate U.S. President Joe Biden's desk after months of delays and debate about how involved the U.S. should be abroad. The measure contains $61 billion for Ukraine, which comes at a time the war-torn country desperately needs new firepower and as Russian President Vladimir Putin has stepped up his attacks. Speaking on the Senate floor Tuesday as the bill was brought up, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer urged his colleagues to act quickly.
In relation to Anasir,
I'm sorry, that was the wrong piece of sound. Speaking on the House floor Tuesday, as the bill was brought up, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer urged his colleagues to act quickly. The U.N.'s Human Rights Office Tuesday called for an international investigation into the reports of mass graves at two Gaza hospitals destroyed in Israeli sieges, saying war crimes may have been committed. Speaking to reporters at the briefing at U.N. headquarters in Geneva, U.N. Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani expressed shock at what the reports indicated. Shamdasani said hospitals are entitled to very special protection under international humanitarian law and added the killing of civilians, detainees, and others not involved in combat is a war crime. India's main opposition party is accusing Prime Minister Narendra Modi of using hate speech after he called Muslims infiltrators, some of his most incendiary rhetoric about the minority faith, days after the country began its week-long election campaign. This is VOA News. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has said Russia's strike on the city of Kharkiv's TV tower Monday is part of an intimidation campaign and an effort to cut off communications in Ukraine. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Zelensky says in his Monday night video address, obviously this is an intimidation to make the terror noticeable to the whole city, adding that work is underway to restore the signal. Ukraine's president called the strike an attempt to limit the city in terms of communication and access to information. He then reiterated the urgent need for air defense, naming four priorities in military aid: protection of the sky, modern artillery, long-range capability, and ensuring that the American support packages arrive as quickly as possible. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
African leaders participating in a security summit in Nigeria are saying they need more funding and new methods to combat escalating violent extremism across the continent. Reuters correspondent David Doyle reports.
Groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda have increasingly been carrying out routine attacks. That includes in the Sahel region, Somalia, and Mozambique. At a security summit in Nigeria on Monday, African Union Commission Chairperson Moussa Faki said the continent needs more funds. Faki said that the number of daily attacks and deaths rose last year to 8 and 44, respectively. That's up from 4 daily attacks and 18 daily deaths between 2017 and 2021. In total, he said, 7,000 civilians and 4,000 military personnel died last year, adding that the situation was being exploited in countries as a basis for military coups.
That's Reuters correspondent David Doyle reporting. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken left Tuesday for 3 days of talks with senior Chinese officials in Shanghai and Beijing. The trip comes as U.S.-China ties are at a critical point over global disputes. Ties between Washington and Beijing are tense and the rifts are growing wider. Speaking last week, Blinken said one of the most concerning developments in recent months is China's support for Russia's defense industrial base, helping Russia circumvent Western sanctions imposed following Russia's invasion of Ukraine.
If China purports, on the one hand, to want good relations with Europe and other countries, it can't, on the other hand, be fueling what is the biggest threat to European security since the end of the Cold War.
China says it has the right to trade with Russia and accuses the U.S. of fanning the flames of the conflict by arming and funding Ukraine. You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events at our website, voanews.com, 24 hours a day. In Washington, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehayas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The Refugee Convention, to remind everyone, is the cornerstone of the international refugee protection regime. It's a life-saving instrument that has saved millions of lives of people fleeing conflict.
That's Matthew Saltmarsh, a spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees, talking about Britain's legislation to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. Details coming up. Also, Nigeria's Consumer Protection Agency closes a shop that barred Nigerian customers. And cannabis remains a hot topic in U.S. politics. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. Britain's parliament early today passed legislation to send some migrants to Rwanda under Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's controversial plan aimed at deterring risky English Channel crossings. The bill delivers what Sunak hopes will be a much-needed political victory and fulfill his pledge to stop the boats. Human rights activists and migrants groups have vowed to continue fighting the policy. The plan is the British government's response to the growing number of migrants from around the world who cross the channel from France in dangerous boats. A few hours after the bill passed, five asylum seekers died when they fell off an overcrowded boat leaving France. Most people who arrive that way apply for asylum, and some have been granted. The Conservative government says these migrants should not be treated as genuine refugees because they did not claim asylum in another safe country, such as France, that they reached first. The British government struck a deal with Rwanda in 2022 to send migrants who arrive as stowaways or in boats to the East African country where their asylum claims would be processed. The plan faced several legal and political hurdles, and no one has yet been sent to Rwanda. Sunak has said the first flights will leave in July. Britain is not alone in trying to control irregular migration. Much of Europe and the United States are struggling with how best to cope with migrants seeking refuge from war, violence, oppression, and climate disasters such as drought and floods. A short time ago, my colleague Paul Indiho spoke with Yasmin Ahmed, the director of Human Rights Watch in Britain, to hear about the concerns her organization has about the Rwandan plan.
Essentially, the bill that's now passed through Parliament means that the UK government has, in one stroke, effectively undermined the rule of law in the United Kingdom and acted in breach of its own international obligations with respect to refugees and asylum seekers. The Supreme Court in the UK made very clear that Rwanda is not a safe country to send asylum seekers to. The UK government have then attempted to legislate away what the court has said, which they are, you're unable to do. The court has made a clear finding. And to try and say that in any event, we're going to ignore what the court says and we're going to ignore our international obligations, which is to ensure that you do not send anyone to another country when there is a risk of mistreatment, including the possibility that they may be returned to the country that they are fleeing. So this is a very, very concerning development because it evidences that this government is willing to set aside and, in fact, just ignore the rule of law in the United Kingdom and also the international obligations to protect refugees and asylum seekers.
Human Rights Watch has come out, condemned this. Other organizations have also done the same. What does this mean going forward?
Human Rights Watch has been documenting violations of human rights, very serious violations of human rights in Rwanda for decades. The UK court has made very clear that Rwanda is not a safe country. So the UK government, by going forward with this deal, by passing this legislation, is acting in breach of its international obligations and is undermining the very idea of responsibility sharing, and also undermining its ability to act on the international stage to promote the rules-based order.
Is this something that can be challenged through the legal systems, either in Europe or in the UK?
What will happen now is that the government's likely to issue and enforce removal notices against certain individuals. Those individuals will have a very, very limited right of appeal in relation to specific characteristics that they may hold. What the UK government has done is prevented and told the UK courts that they are not allowed to find Rwanda an unsafe country per se, but they've allowed individual asylum seekers to make specific claims in relation to individual characteristics that they may hold.
The British Prime Minister, Mr. Rishi Sunak, has contended that this is to deter people from coming into the United Kingdom. But when you look across the globe, you see immigrants who are facing all sorts of challenges trying to flee those countries. Could this measure deter anybody from trying to get into the United Kingdom?
We know that they're ineffective. We know that people will continue to seek safety because they are in danger. And so what it ends up doing is, rather than deterring people, let's be clear, this is not a deterrent. What this does is just make it a lot more dangerous for people who will come, because they are, in fact, at risk of their life.
That was Yasmin Ahmed, UK Director at Human Rights Watch. She was speaking with VOA's Paul Indiho. Despite rights advocates' concern about Britain's plan to transfer thousands of asylum seekers to Rwanda to process their asylum claims, some Kigali residents see the decision as positive for the country. Alice Mukwama tells Reuters News Rwandans are grateful to receive the immigrants from Britain because it will support the country's development. Henry Njagimina notes Rwanda's own experience with displacement during the genocide attacks against ethnic Tutsis 30 years ago. He says, in Rwanda's history, they had more refugees as a result of genocide against Tutsi, and they go to help from the neighboring countries. He says, Rwandans support the migrants because they understand, and it is good for them to come and good for Rwanda to host them. The United Nations Agencies for Human Rights and for Refugees warns Britain's decision to transfer asylum seekers to Rwanda violates international law. They warn it will have harmful consequences for refugee protection. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The two United Nations agencies expressed alarm Tuesday at the British Parliament's passage of a bill that allows the country to deport asylum seekers to Rwanda in breach of both international and British law. Matthew Saltmarsh is the spokesperson for the UN High Commissioner for Refugees. He calls this a somber day for refugee rights. He warns Britain's decision to shift responsibility for hearing asylum claims and determining refugee status to Rwanda poses serious risks.
The Refugee Convention, to remind everyone, is the cornerstone of the international refugee protection regime. It's a life-saving instrument that has saved millions of lives of people fleeing conflict and persecution each year.
Saltmarsh says international protection responsibility rests with the state where an asylum seeker arrives, whether at land borders or at sea. He says this obligation remains unchanged despite Britain's arrangements to transfer this responsibility to Rwanda. UN Human Rights Chief Volker Turk echoes concerns about the ability of asylum seekers to get a fair hearing in Rwanda. His spokesperson reveals Sabina Shamdasani notes that Britain's transfer bill was passed after the Supreme Court found substantial grounds to believe that it would be unsafe to send asylum seekers to Rwanda. This includes the possibility that refugees could be summarily deported to their home countries from Rwanda. She says it is critical that all removals from Britain are carried out after it assesses individual asylum claims from refugees and migrants. And this, she says, must be done in compliance with international human rights and refugee law.
What we are concerned about is that this move runs counter to basic principles of the rule of law, and it risks delivering a serious blow to human rights protections. One of the key areas of concern, and as you said, there are many areas of concern here, but one of the key areas is that avenues of appeal are very much narrowed as well.
If the transfer agreement to Rwanda goes ahead, the UN leaders say they fear this might set a dangerous precedent for migration policies. They say they already have seen comments from other countries that Britain's transfer plan might be a path they could follow. The British government has said the transfer plan is intended to stop the flow of undocumented migrants and the smugglers they pay to take them by boat from France to Britain. The journey can be deadly, and hours after Parliament passed the transfer law, French authorities said five migrants died in the English Channel on Tuesday. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehia Wahib in Washington. For more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Nigerian authorities have sealed a Chinese supermarket that had barred local residents from shopping in what they say is a pattern of discrimination against citizens. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, spoke to some residents about the controversy.
The Royal Choice supermarket came under heavy criticism after allegations that the owners barred some Nigerians from making purchases. The supermarket, which is located in an exclusive part of Abuja, caters only to Chinese citizens and diplomatic staff, sparking outrage among Nigerians. One resident, Joy Oche, describes the policy as going against the values of inclusivity.
It's discrimination at its peak. It's unethical and illegal. There's no reason in the world that would make for this action to be acceptable. Or am I missing something? Isn't this natural soil again? I don't really blame the foreigners, but people who set standards for them to be able to operate like this.
Another resident, Steve Uzoma, called on the authorities to take a serious look into the matter.
It's actually very unfortunate that what Chinese would not do in their home country, they come over here to Nigeria and do it with impunity. This is the greatest disrespect I've ever heard or seen.
In response to the alleged discrimination, the Nigeria agency responsible for investigating the complaint, the Federal Competition and Consumer Protection Commission, or FCCPC, raided the supermarket on Monday. Boladele Adeyinka, the Director of Surveillance and Investigation at the Consumer Agency, led the team. She told journalists more investigations will be carried out to determine the reason for the alleged policy. She said no Nigerian should be subjected to discrimination or denied access to any store.
Inquiries have shown that as of this morning, this supermarket was open to discriminate against any person who has any desire, intention to patronize any shop. It's a public shop with access facility and also business.
Workers at the supermarket told the FCCPC the owner had fled the shop when she realized the investigators were coming. Authorities say the agency had no choice but to shut down the supermarket. The owner, Cindy Liu Biu, has until 11 a.m. on Wednesday to report to the agency or the supermarket will remain closed. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
The United States has agreed with Niger's request to withdraw U.S. troops from the West African country. The agreement will end the presence of more than 1,000 American troops and throws into question the status of a $110 million U.S. airbase where they monitor the actions of extremist forces in the Sahel region. The region, including neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso, has become a hot spot for Islamist extremism in recent years, and Niger witnessed such attacks spike dramatically following the 2023 military coup that ousted Niger's elected government. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, explained to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi how the pullout will transform Washington's counter-terrorism posture in the region.
The U.S. is responding to this request by the military junta in Niger after having established a strong cooperative agreement and set of partnerships with successive democratic and elected governments in Niger, including the recently deposed President Bazoum. So the U.S. engagement in Niger has always been complementary to the work of the Nigerian government and armed forces, and this support also extended to neighboring countries, Mali and Burkina Faso. So the real impact from this withdrawal will be felt by the citizens in those countries. In Niger, we've seen a fourfold increase in the fatalities linked to violent extremist attacks since the coup in July of 2023. Countering violent extremism is more than just the military. It's also about trying to work with communities and provide alternative employment opportunities. The United States has been the leading development partner in Niger for more than a decade with $250 million of demand assistance a year. So these are the things that will be lost as a result of the withdrawal. The U.S. will likely realign its efforts to work with governments that see mutually beneficial partnerships and really want to invest in protecting their citizens.
The Sahel region, including neighboring Mali and Burkina Faso, has become a global hotspot of Islamist extremism in recent years, and Niger witnessed such attacks spike, as you said, dramatically following the coup. Until the coup lost year, the arrangement between Niger and the United States, including counterterrorism drone flights and U.S.-Nigerian troops partnering on some patrols. With the French earlier withdrawal and now the U.S. pulling out, who will fill the security vacuum?
Let's keep in mind that the main provider of security in Niger are the Nigerian armed forces, and the U.S. was always playing a supporting role. And this is true for other security partners, you know, the G5 Sahel, ECOWAS, the coastal West African countries. They were all there to provide support. And so the request to withdraw for the U.S. is actually part of a pattern that we've seen, not just in Niger, but with the other military juntas in Mali and Burkina Faso, pushing away their regional security partners and their neighbors, as well as with international partners. So the first actor filling the vacuum that is left are the violent extremist groups. You know, we've seen a doubling in the number of violent extremist incidents in the Sahel since the coups have happened, and a tripling in the number of fatalities in Mali and Burkina Faso. Violent extremists control over half of the territory. And so we have this, you know, stark paradox of worsening security in the Sahel while these military juntas push out their security partners.
Last week, at least 100 Russian military instructors arrived in Niamey, marking an escalation of Niger's security relationship with Moscow. And reports on Nigerian state television said that the Russian instructors would be providing training and equipment, especially an air defense system to Niger. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's notable on a couple of fronts. First, you know, 100 troops is not that many, and that they're focusing on air defense system when there's not an air threat shows you that the real purpose of these troops is to protect the regime. It's not about protecting citizens. It's not about the threat from the violent extremist, which is the real security issue that Niger is facing. So this is a political act and shows that the junta feels very insecure and needs Russian support to stay in power. We should note that the Russian support is also coming with a fee. They're being paid, and Nigerians are also providing the Russians access to gold reserves in the country. country. So it's similar arrangements to what we've seen in Mali and Burkina Faso. These are extractive arrangements that the Russians are negotiating. And I think it really underscores that, you know, the Russians are not investing in these countries. Russia provides less than 1% of the foreign direct investment coming in. They've been a marginal development partner. So it really begs the question, what are they providing? And I think the evidence we're seeing in Niger is they're helping these regimes stay in power. It's really a political venture that we're seeing play out.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Center for the Africa Center for Strategic Studies here in Washington. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Al-Shenawi. Marijuana is a rare consensus issue in politically divided America, with polls showing that 88% of Americans support at least partially legalizing the drug. But cannabis advocates say neither of the leading U.S. presidential candidates are capitalizing on shifting attitudes. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has our story.
Nearly three-quarters of Americans live in states where marijuana is legal for medicinal purposes. Half the population live where it's also allowed recreationally. But cannabis remains entirely illegal under federal law, where it's classified alongside heroin and LSD as drugs with no currently accepted medical use and a high potential for abuse. The overwhelming majority of American voters who think that should be changed makes cannabis a ripe opportunity for presidential candidates Joe Biden and Donald Trump, especially among young voters, according to Scotty Smart, who's a community organizer with the civic engagement group, The New Georgia Project.
A lot of people don't understand policy. A lot of people don't know how policies affect their day-to-day lives. I think cannabis is an issue that ignites and incites young people to pay attention.
At the National Cannabis Festival and Washington Policy Summit earlier this month, founder Caroline Phillips said neither Biden nor Trump have delivered.
For both of them, one thing they have in common is that their track records on cannabis have been inconsistent and incremental. We've heard promises from both administrations, neither of which have panned out in full.
Under Biden, the Department of Health and Human Services recommended changing marijuana to a lighter drug classification, rescheduling it instead of making it legal, which would be descheduling.
The current White House's policy on marijuana remains slightly unclear. They have given us great signals that they're willing to shift towards descheduling, but most likely rescheduling. However, we haven't quite seen the action to back up their words.
In 2018, then President Trump said he would, quote, probably support efforts to end federal prohibitions on marijuana and leave its legality up to the states. That legislation never got out of Congress. Trump told a Newsmax TV interviewer last year that studies show marijuana, quote, does significant damage, and yet, from a voting standpoint, it's a pretty popular thing.
Trump's track record on cannabis has been inconsistent at best. We've heard him both say that people who sell drugs in the illicit market should be jailed and even put to death, I think, with some of the scarier rhetoric around that. But we've also seen him pardon people who've been locked up for cannabis.
U.S. voters' shifting attitudes about marijuana show in Gallup polling, where last year 70% of adults supported legalization. That's more than double the number who said they favored legalization in 2000. Morgan Fox is political director for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
This is an issue that is increasingly important to voters, particularly young voters. And any candidate that actually wants to get ahead, whether it's in the presidential election, in Congress, or state legislatures or local legislators, if they ignore this issue, it's going to be at their peril.
Younger voters animated by legalizing marijuana are hoping for Biden administration action on cannabis before the November election. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
The United Nations says that more than 50,000 people have been displaced by clashes in a disputed area in northern Ethiopia. This comes as the international community is expressing concern about the violence involving fighters from rival regions. The French news agency AFP says armed clashes took place over the weekend in Alamata town and Raya Alamata, Zata and Olfa. The Amhara regional administration last week accused the Tigray People's Liberation Front Party, which controls Tigray, of invading Raya Alamata and other areas, which has identity questions. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Kelly Williams, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.